Rolling. What's happening, y'all? Andy and Zach, the A to Z show. A to Z, no BS. And we are coming at you with episode 63.
63.
Which is, it's amazing. Sometimes I think, wow, 50, I feel like was such a big, honestly, I think 10 was a big milestone. And then 50, and now here we are in the mid-60s.
What I like about it, too, is, again, like, we were speaking off air. I was having computer problems, and I was very frustrated, but I was like, I gotta go. I have to be at my podcast meeting. It's so ingrained in my week now that, unless there's, like, an emergency situation, there's no reason why we wouldn't be here.
Right.
Or, like, I guess if we were traveling or something, but...
Yeah.
But, yeah, but that's why we record off schedule. So we have a few in the tank.
Right.
Not currently, but in the past we have. We need to get on that for this year.
Yeah, well, when we're not breaking bones and ripping tendons,
it's
a lot simpler to just stay on track.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. Speaking of mid-60s, we have a very special guest booked for next month.
Ooh.
And that is the teaser that I'm going to throw out right now.
I'm glad I didn't say it.
Yeah,
I know who it is.
Because I still want to keep it a little secret.
Yeah.
But yeah, anybody who's in the strength and conditioning scene might already be able to take a wild guess.
Mm.
But all that to say, I'm really happy with where we're at in terms of not only the swath of topics, content, and guests we've had so far, but I'm also really excited about what's to come. So I think 2022 has been off to a very strong start, and yeah, all signs point to this being a really landmark year.
Okay.
Here's a big sign. What do you think about, I mean, a landmark year, not always necessarily in a positive sense. I don't know if you caught the Oscars last night.
I did. Well, no, I didn't, but I caught the hullabaloo about the Oscars this morning and all day today.
But the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air himself, Will Smith, took quite the crack at Chris Rock.
Mm.
And, you know, on the one hand, I want to come to the defense of, you know, comedians and the freedom to crack jokes.
Sure.
You know, I don't really think that his G.I. Jane joke was in good taste.
I agree.
I think, you know, Chris Rock being the legend that he is probably could have come up with a better joke. Or just not picked on Jada.
Yeah.
In the first place. But yeah, then Will Smith coming up and physically accosting Chris Rock. You know, that's another headline that who would have imagined would have been in the newspapers for the year. But yeah, I think Will Smith has been, you know, I don't really follow celebrity gossip too much, but it's my understanding that, you know, he and Jada have had some trials and tribulations over the recent years.
Right. I've vaguely followed it, but like you, I don't indulge in celebrity gossip.
But on the other side, you know, hey, a man standing up for his wife.
Yeah.
Even though it was, you know, quite misguided. I mean, I get it.
I wonder if he could have gone on stage and been like, hey, man, nah.
I think that's what everybody wishes what would have happened if he would have, like, come up on Chris Rock, like, with some presence.
Yeah.
And just pulled him in and been like,
yeah, don't be saying stuff like
it.
That. Yeah.
Stop it. I think that would have been the move.
Hmm.
Yeah. But
next time.
I guess if you have the gall to get up and walk on stage in the middle of the Oscars in the first place, you're probably ready to slap somebody.
Right. Well, and that was also like an interesting topic. Apparently, there have been a lot of opinion pieces on the whole situation, and I haven't been paying attention. I don't really have an opinion one way or another. Like you, I think Chris Rock's joke was in poor taste. I also think Will Smith smacking a man on stage at the Oscars was in poor taste. But I don't know. You know what? It's not my business. So however they want to handle it, they can handle it. But overall, you know, at the end of the day, I was just thinking about this when you were talking about it. At the end of the day, if that's the worst thing that's happening so far outside of Ukraine in 2022, given the last 2 years that we've had, all right.
Yeah.
I mean, I can live with that.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like everything's gotten so serious in the last 2 years.
Sure.
Like,
sure.
Yeah. And so now, like, would this, I guess, if this had happened in, like, 2018 or 2019, would it be a bigger deal? Or would it not be such a big deal? Like, are we more sensitive now to, like, things that happen because we're inundated with stuff? Or because COVID has kept us sort of indoors and, like, on lockdown for 2 years? Or, I don't know. Sometimes I just feel like pop culture overreacts to a lot of stuff often. And I don't know if it's because we're bored or because we're inundated with it or because it's actually a big deal. Like what happened was an actual big deal. I don't know. But everybody's been talking about it all day, so.
Yeah. Well, I just brought that up to, I don't know, I feel like every now and then it's poignant to bring up something in pop culture.
Well, and also too, it means for our audience that we're not just robots that only think about training and chicken and vegetables.
You know what's funny? Dude, so I had friends in town this weekend, and we actually met up with my buddy Pat at East Nashville Beer Works, where we've actually done a few podcasts, and I was wearing my East Nashville Beer Works t-shirt that you actually gifted me.
That's right.
When they were doing like their 90s throwback party. And so I actually wore that, I wore that shirt out that night. And we were at the 308 throwback party.
Yeah.
And this girl was like, oh, I love your shirt. Love East Nashville Beer Works. And I was like, yeah. So we were like chatting. I was like, yeah, I love their Cumberland Punch and all this stuff. And I was like, actually, me and a buddy of mine, we've actually, we actually used to hang out there all the time and do podcasts. And she was like, what is your podcast about? And I was like, ah, it's just fitness stuff. Like, we're a couple of trainers. And the look of disappointment in her face.
What?
Like, was palpable.
Oh.
She was like, ah, okay.
Oh, I guess she's not into fitness.
I guess. I don't know. But that's that was like the biggest, that was like the biggest seesaw of emotions that I've seen somebody go through. Like, whoa, you have a podcast? What's it all about? And I said, fitness. And you then it was like,
next time read the room,
not
you'd be
excited.
Like, actually, it's crime drama.
It's true crime.
It's true crime.
Yeah.
I bet you she would have lit up, been like, oh my God. And then, well, and then it would put you on the spot because I don't know any of the true crime episodes, like podcasts. There's like 18,000 of them.
Yeah, no. No, I could not sustain that fib for very long.
No. What's the one with the two women that everybody likes?
Something I don't know.
Make no, I don't know.
I don't know.
Anyway, my wife used to listen to it or still listens to it. It's a good podcast.
Shouts out to the Killer Queens. You remember the girl that we had on our group call that one time way back, who was a co-host of the True Crime Murder podcast?
Yeah. Okay.
I'm pretty sure that was the name of their podcast. Killer Queens.
We haven't done one of those group calls in a while.
No, we haven't.
It's on you, buddy.
I know.
I'm a recluse after I get done with my hours.
If anything's going to move and shake, I'm the one who does it.
That's true. You are.
All right. Well, that's a lot of yapping. So we were thinking about topics of discussion for today. And you, so it's funny. I've never answered any questions on Quora, but at least, 10 years ago or so, that was like one of the more popular like Q&A forums.
Sure.
Maybe like it was kind of up there with Reddit maybe back in the day. And so you have answered some questions on Quora.
Well, years ago. I haven't been active on it in probably 3 or 4 years.
Years ago. But some of your answers still rank.
They do.
Is that my understanding?
About in any given week, between 300 and 600 views a week still. And I haven't answered anything in 4 years.
Yeah, that's amazing.
The total amount of views that, and I haven't written that many as far as I know, maybe 10 or 15 total answers, have 37,000 views or 36,000 and change, which I thought was pretty wild.
Yeah.
That makes me feel like I'm on YouTube.
Minus the video.
Right.
Well, I mean, in the sense that people are actively searching and finding your...
My content.
Your words.
Yeah.
Your content.
Which is wild. And actually, my answer from 4 years ago was a very good answer.
So I know that's not exactly where we wanted the meat and potatoes of the show to be, but would you mind sharing what one of your more popular answers to whatever given question was?
The most popular one, I'd have to pull it up because I can't remember exactly how it went. But it had something to do with building muscle. Shocker, you know. Let's see if I can find it. Let's see. Oh, when is a good time to wear a weightlifting belt? That was the question that I answered.
All right, what was your answer? It
says, I've only been lifting for a few months and I deadlift squat around 135. My answer was, you can probably go a really long time without a weightlifting belt. Assuming you progress your lifts in a reasonable way, your body will produce the core strength necessary to handle the increasing weights. Reasonable progress would be about adding 5 to 10 pounds to your lifts maybe every few weeks or months, taking exercise through full range of motion, making sure you warm up each lift appropriately, steering clear of exercising to failure, having 1 to 2 reps in the tank. That's about it. I said, in the meantime, spend more time under the bar. If you're squat and your deadlift are 135, you don't need a weightlifting belt. You need more time under the bar.
Right.
I'll be the first to admit that I have very pedestrian strength numbers. I am sometimes okay with that fact, sometimes not okay with that fact. But for my pedestrian strength numbers, I have never worn a weightlifting belt.
Mm.
I've also never used any gear, and I've never used like straps until recently because my grip strength is failing because my shoulder is failing.
Okay.
So I will start using straps for like deadlifts, but I pulled 335 EMOM the other day on a trap bar.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I went 8x4.
Cool. So you've never worn a lifting belt?
Never.
Wow. Interesting.
I also have very pedestrian strength numbers.
The more you know.
Take that however you want to.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool. Well, good answer. And I think the answer for the vast majority of people is, yep. Unless you have like a goal in like competing in powerlifting, which is kind of a whole nother conversation, I think there is a lot of merit to getting as strong conditioned as possible with as little assistance or gear as possible. Because then you start kind of confusing, like, well, what's the point of the exercise? What is the point of training? So, you know, especially if someone's on the younger side and has, like, good technique, which, you know, prioritizing good technique is quite an assumption to keep. But yeah, I for one really went through a period of time where I was like a student of the weight belt, so to speak. Mm. So I kind of like know how to use it to the best, advantage specifically in powerlifting. I don't really know how, my guess is the average bro in the gym who puts on like a Velcro, you know, belt probably doesn't really get much of that.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, if you can be like a student of abdominal pressure and spinal mechanics and all that good stuff, you can get a lot out of a weightlifting belt. But it's also like, you know, again, it's kind of something that is most useful in small doses. Like cayenne pepper.
Well, I put that shit on everything. No,
yeah, it's because you're from Brentwood.
Yeah, I need everything. Mayonnaise is spicy for me. No, I love cayenne.
You're from the home of hot chicken. Yeah, so
I put cayenne on a lot of stuff. I was just thinking about this while we were talking about it. You know what I like about weightlifting, weight training, lifting weights? You don't have to pay to play. So, like, for example, I played collegiate lacrosse.
Mm-hmm.
You know how expensive equipment is to play, just to gear up. Like, you don't have to play, not even just to play, but to just have the gear.
If you'll forgive me, mm-hmm. my stereotypical image of a lacrosse player is not unlike that of, like, a country club tennis player.
Right.
So if we're talking about, like,
right.
suburban, Caucasian,
sure.
upper middle class,
sure.
upper class, that kind of thing. So, yeah. So, I mean, I see how that makes sense. That
right.
there's the equipment, and I'm sure that's only the start of it.
Dues and whatever.
Yeah.
Tennis, golf, lacrosse, probably baseball, skiing.
Oh, yeah.
There are a lot of sports.
Hey, listen. Have good insurance.
Right.
Listen, if you want to get out on the slopes, get your insurance in line first, okay?
And test the durability of your leg bones.
Drink your milk. Get your calcium.
Lift your weights. And hope for the best.
Do your ankle mobility. Get your insurance in line before you go out on the slopes.
Super low deductible. And then just go thrash your body on the slopes.
Dude, see what you got.
Yeah. No, like all those, like, oh, there's a lot of recreational activities that require a pretty substantial buy-in. Let's say you want to play guitar or drums or bass.
Yeah.
That's substantial, but there's a little bit of money that you need to spend.
Yeah, for sure.
What I like about lifting, and there is a version of this that'll come back to the more expensive side, is I was thinking about this with the weightlifting belt. What I like about lifting is you don't really have to pay much to play. Like a gym membership, which mm-hmm. could be as cheap as $10 a month mm-hmm. at Planet Fitness, or could be as expensive as, you know, whatever premium at some bougie gym, whatever. But for the most part, you can engage in regular physical activity and lift weights for really not a lot of money. To take that a step further, within the fitness community, however, there are those gyms like Gym 5, which I don't think their monthly membership is not unreasonable. I would say it's about on par with like the YMCA.
Yeah.
Not unreasonable. Their equipment is functional and for the most part clean. The space is clean enough considering mm-hmm. how many people are in and out of there.
Yep.
But there's a dinginess about it. There's like a...
A little bit, yeah.
I'll say grittiness.
Well, the building itself is very old.
Right. Is that dirty? But it's not like, it's not pristine.
Yeah.
And we've spoken a million times about Gym 5, but everybody that's in there is in there to lift and not necessarily be seen doing the thing in the scene. They're there to do themselves, to lift weights, get jacked, whatever. There are versions of fitness, however, where it's like the Fabletics and the color coordinating and the really expensive lifting shoes and the belts and the straps and the headphones and the sweatbands. And it's like this.
I will say, a lot of times, I am the bougiest lifter in Gym 5. When I'm decked out in Lululemon.
I was going to say, when you're wearing your Lulu pants.
which is very funny for me to think about. Yeah, in my Lulu and my Nobles.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, I'm actually the bougiest lifter in Gym 5 right now.
You might be.
Sometimes I am. Did you see that they got new Echo bikes?
I did. And rowers.
Oh. Those look great.
You know what I love about that? Well, one, I'm going to get one of those bikes for the gym. The other is when they had them, I walked in one day when all those boxes were in the front, like, hallway, like, when you walk in.
Mm-hmm.
And they had signs on all of the boxes that said, yes, this is a new bike. Yes, this is a new rower. As if people were like, oh, is that a new rower? And they were like, yeah. So they put signs on every single box. Yes, this is a new bike.
That's funny. Well, now, to be fair, some of those old exercise bikes were bad.
Yeah, they are bad.
I mean, there was that one seat that just didn't screw in.
Oh, yeah. I don't know how anybody used it, if they ever did.
Yeah.
But there, again, so it goes, there's a grittiness to that gym, and that's why I love it. I love how gritty it is. Some of those barbells are bent. We've experienced that, which is fine. Whatever. There's a grittiness to it, and I like it for that reason. But you're not there to be seen doing the thing, whereas there are some gyms or some fitness spaces where it's about the Instagram, about the right angles and the right hashtags and, like, I don't know. And so it's like a weird version of, like, pay to play, where it's like I have to be a part of the scene. I need everyone to know that I wear the expensive clothes and I rock the expensive shoes. And it kind of goes back to, is it Dave Tate that said it? Something about don't have $100 shoes and a 10-cent squat. I think that was Dave Tate. I think about that all the time in those gyms. Not in Gym 5, but other gyms, where I'm like, don't have $100 shoes and a 10-cent squat.
Speaking of Dave Tate and his history at the infamous Westside Barbell.
Yeah.
How could we have had this whole conversation about Will Smith and Chris Rock when we're talking about things that are in the news for this week, and I failed to mention the passing of Louis Simmons?
I know. I texted you about it when it happened.
You did. Yeah. So for anybody who doesn't know, Louis Simmons is probably the biggest name in...
One of the biggest names in powerlifting, probably.
Certainly powerlifting. Yeah. Strength and conditioning in general. But when you're talking about probably the top American authority in powerlifting, it's Louis Simmons.
Yeah, of Westside Barbell.
Yeah.
Well, and he... was he the one that very much popularized, like, conjugate, Westside conjugate, all that?
Yep.
Now, I only know a vague amount about what that actually is, like how he taught it, but I'm aware of what conjugate programming is, but their version of it, I'm only vaguely aware. Yep. But they produce some of the best powerlifters in the world, if not the country.
Yep.
So that's not nothing. He passed away. So how old was he? He was older. He's got to be in his 60s or 70s, but...
Yeah, I'm not sure. But, yeah, I have read, I guess, maybe the seminal West Side book, The West Side Method, maybe. I think I read kind of in the early days of my training. And honestly, man, from what I remember, a lot of it kind of went over my head. I don't know how, like, closely I was actually reading. I mean, conjugate method, Westside method has come under a lot of criticism from the natural strength and conditioning crowd.
Yeah.
For a lot of obvious and, I think, good reasons. But listen, I mean, hey, at the end of the day, results speak volumes, and you know, you could certainly lob a lot of caveats and criticisms at
Westside,
at the method, for the style of training they do, for the type of trainee, for the type of lifter that they cater to.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. But yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, I am kind of most familiar with Louis Simmons and his material through the coaches that I follow closely who kind of studied under him.
Right.
And most of their praise for Louis Simmons is not so much in the details of the method, but more so his attitude and his way of running his gym and the way of running his business, which by all accounts was very, on the one hand, very generous and very open in terms of how much time and content that he put out for free.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I've heard stories that, you know, he would do like, you know, 12-hour seminars for basically no money.
Right.
And would just give and give and give of himself and of his knowledge in the capacity of like workshops. And then obviously he put out tons of books, tons of articles, produced tons of athletes and coaches who also did the same, who I think, you know, kind of followed his example. And was a very bluntly honest dude, but also someone who just loved the pursuit,
right,
and who was a real craftsman, who was a real artist, who you know, obviously had both a deep logical scientific understanding of training, but also had a super passionate depth for training. And I think anybody who's familiar with Louis Simmons and Westside understands that.
Right.
And that's really where the magic comes in, where you can be a nerd, but also be a beast.
Right.
You know, and just be totally aggressively just driven in the pursuit. And yeah, when you're talking about, you know, icons of the art and sport of powerlifting, weightlifting, strength and conditioning, there's really no bigger name than Louis Simmons.
Right.
In our country.
So, yeah, right. It's a matter of respect, because, I mean, he really, like, honestly paved the way for a lot of powerlifting, probably for a lot of powerlifting for like the last 30 years.
For sure.
Yeah. So, and I had heard the same. Like, I heard he was a very kind man. I think Lou Schuler the other day was commenting, like, he was on the phone with Louis Simmons a number of times and always offered to pay him for his time, and he would never take a dollar. So, no. I always have a tremendous amount of respect for those kinds of coaches. And those are the kinds of coaches that, not that I have nearly like a fraction of the pedigree that Louis Simmons has, but I hope that one day, if I can return the favor, like, I would probably jump on a phone call. There's actually, you know what? There's a woman who's trying to get into training, and she's been shadowing me at my gym.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then she texted me today, and she was like, can I pay you for your time, or can we go to lunch? Because I want to ask you some questions. I was like, let's just go to lunch. Like, you don't have to pay me. Like, A, I don't think that I'm the kind of expert that can be like, yeah, pay me. And B, like, I just feel very uncomfortable with that, especially trying to help a fellow coach, like, break into the industry.
Yeah.
I'm not going to be an additional barrier to that.
Right.
Just be like, look, let's just go to lunch and, like, let's talk about stuff. And I'll do my best, given my limited knowledge, to help you out, and we'll see where it goes. But, like, no, don't pay me. Like, let's go to lunch. That's fine. I can do that. But
yeah.
I've always had a tremendous amount of respect for those guys, because they could, if you want to jump on a phone call with Louis Simmons, he could charge $500 an hour, and people would pay it.
Sure.
And the fact that he doesn't do that just speaks to the kind of coach that he wants to be. He genuinely loves helping people.
Yeah.
So I have a lot of respect for that and admiration. So
yeah,
we lost a good one.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. And, you know, I could be wrong, but a few months ago now that we lost John Meadows?
Uh-huh.
I could be wrong, but I think John Meadows put in a little bit of time either at Westside or otherwise just being kind of a local Ohio guy, had connections with Westside and Louis Simmons as well.
Well, and similarly, if I remember right, I'd never met John Meadows, but I think the stories were similar, that anytime, if you want to ask him any questions or train with him or whatever, very welcoming, very receptive. So I think it's been my own observation of our industry that the juggernauts in our industry are great about not charging people or being very understanding and welcoming to just talk shop. And so Not that I have the kind of, again, nowhere close to the experience or pedigree of those two gentlemen, but I always hope that one day if someone is like, oh, you know, I'd love to, like, just pick your brain, I'll pay you. I'll be like, no, let's go get coffee, hang out, or just let's jump on a phone call. Like, it's really no big deal. I want to help people. I don't know. I have a lot of admiration for those guys because, like you said, published, well-known, famous juggernauts in the industry. Like, I mean, it's like Dwayne The Rock Johnson for the weightlifting community, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And the fact that they'll jump on a phone call or just have a conversation with you and just want to talk shop is, I think, incredible. So mm-hmm. I hope that if I'm ever at that, even like sniffing anything close to that kind of experience, that I can give back to the community in my own way, whatever that looks like.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, to be fair, I think that's what I think what we are trying to do with this podcast is take like the casual conversation at scale with just talking shop over the podcast. So I think that should count for something. But yeah, I mean, that also speaks to the fact that, you know, there's something to be said about knowing your lane, let's say as a business person or a service provider, and like, okay, I make my living doing this.
Right.
And when I have time and space in my schedule for supporting and encouraging other folks in the business, well, you know, it's no skin off of my nose to help you out. Obviously, like, schedules can be very busy, and it's not always, you know, appropriate to take a couple hours to go out for coffee or lunch when you're, like, you know, sometimes booked for 10 or 12 hours straight, like, mm-hmm. every day of the week. But yeah, I mean, that's an attitude that I've always tried to, keep on the front burner, so to speak, that, like, it helping other people, let's say altruistically, or maybe just from the sheer passion of wanting to do it, always comes back to you.
Mm-hmm.
Like, in my experience, you know, again, just hanging out with new and kind of fresh, you know, local coaches in any capacity that I can, ultimately, that helps keep me more motivated.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and that's, again, that's kind of one of the kind of like backhanded benefits of this podcast is I get more motivated the more I give.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's like I think we were talking about, I'll share this, when I was hosting friends this weekend, you know, we went out downtown and I ran into this big group of kids who were kind of fresh college graduates.
Mm-hmm.
Like, five guys, five gals, you know, they were all like couples, and some of the guys were collegiate wrestlers and they were all kind of into fitness. And when I mentioned, like, that's kind of what I do, and oh, like, here's like some kettlebell content for you, because they were super into obviously wrestling and jiu-jitsu and all that stuff, and you know, asking about training, I just got, you know, I just turned, you know what it's like.
Yep.
Andy knows what it's like.
Yep.
When I'm like in public and I just get switched on.
Yep.
And I'm like, let me take you guys to school for about 7 minutes here. And so, like, in the middle of Tootsie's, I was spouting off about kettlebells and training and mobility and martial arts and wrestling and jiu-jitsu and longevity. Now, granted, these kids were like 22, 23.
Sure.
And I was like, here's a couple life lessons from someone who's about 10 years ahead of the game. And yeah, I just got so jazzed. And they could tell that this is what I'm all about. So they were obviously listening close and taking notes and following along on Instagram.
Nice.
But
you gotta pump those numbers up.
Hey, and I told him, hey, Every subscriber, every follower counts. But yeah, man, so I get a real thrill out of people who are eager to learn when I feel like I have something to impart.
Sure.
So I feel like if we continue on our path, that is just going to grow. The more we have to offer, the more people will seek, so to speak.
Mm.
And the more that kind of energizes the whole give and take dynamic. And that's really what it's all about.
Hmm. You know what I like about when I'm working with clients, they'll sometimes ask me questions that cannot be answered simply. They could be answered simply, and I think that's what they want.
Mm.
I have difficulty going there, as Anthony or anybody who listens to this podcast probably knows. That also works with me. Ken, I'm going to do another of that Belgian Blonde. It's fabulous.
Make that too.
Thank you, Ken. Drinking the Belgian Blonde that's newly tapped over here at Sons, and it's very good.
It is delish.
Yeah. And delish. Next, I feel like next week when the weather's warmer, maybe when the weather's warmer, we can take this out back outside again. I'd like to do that. But
as long as the road noise and...
Like birds and
birds
stuff,
aren't
yeah,
too loud.
And planes and helicopters and... Right. Right, that's true.
There's a lot out there.
Well, we could test it, and then we could always move back in time.
Yeah.
But, yeah. but anyway, so, like, when I'm working with clients, sometimes they'll ask me questions that they probably are looking for a simple answer. I don't like doing that, even if that's what they're looking for. In part because it's rare that there's a very black and white answer in fitness. You know that. We all know that. I will trade you.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you so much. Appreciate you.
Sure thing.
But I'm hesitant to just give them the short and sweet answer, in part because I don't want to appear like so much of an authority that my answer can't be questioned.
Mm.
In other words, if you were to ask me a fitness question and it was a genuine, it depends kind of question, I'm going to flesh that out because I don't want to just give you a short and sweet answer that you're probably looking for. At the same time, I don't think that's doing it justice. I think that would or could maybe shift me into the sort of a... what's the word I'm looking for? I don't want to be an authority figure who's... thoughts and assumptions and whatever can't be questioned, can't be dismantled.
Mm.
And you've seen this with some, not all juggernauts in the industry like being questioned in their authority. They don't like it at all. They get really angry.
They'll block you.
They block you. I don't want to be that kind of person.
Andy would know. He's been blocked.
Have I been blocked? Who blocked me?
You told me you got
blocked. Oh, there's a guy that blocked me. Yeah, there's a guy that blocked me. And that was that. So, again, that's the same thing. So I answered a question that a guy posed, and he didn't like the way that I answered it. And so he blocked me from commenting on anything that he posts. Right. Instead of having an open and honest dialogue and discussion, he just blocked me. I'm never going to be that guy. Fuck that guy. Because I think if you get to a point where you can't, your authority can't be questioned, then you're not the kind of coach that I want to be. You become like an authoritarian in like your own little world. There's a very specific person that I'm thinking of that can't say the word five. Yeah, he's like that. What he would say is if you question his expertise, that you don't know what the fuck you're talking about, or that you're too weak, or that you don't know anything, or that you haven't ever run the program correctly. It's your fault for not getting it or for asking questions.
Sure.
His fault for being unable to explain it in a better way, or to even just modify his perspective on training. It's your fault for not understanding it.
Mm.
I don't like that at all. Mm. I think you've become dogmatic in your own work.
Sure.
And so that's the kind of coach I don't want to be, is that kind of coach.
Well, before you drink,
we should cheers.
Let's cheers to
Louis Simmons?
Let's cheers to Louis Simmons.
Cheers, brother. Lifting all those big-ass weights in heaven. Yeah. So, again, the short version of all that is, if you come work with me and I answer your question in a long-winded way, it's because I want it to be fallible.
Yeah.
If you so choose.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's funny. When I think back to my formative years at Lifetime Fitness, you know, the corporate gym, I would get those kind of like basic questions all the time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, fill in the blank. Obviously, it's mostly with weight loss, sometimes with strength, sometimes with like movement issues and flexibility and all that stuff. And I would sit there with people and just talk out all the nuance.
Yep.
For
which they probably don't love.
10 minutes, 20 minutes at a time. And of course, yeah, I mean, like, you think about my management who's just sitting back and thinking, this guy is wasting our time and money. And I think I've talked about how I was actually a liability to Lifetime Fitness for a very long time.
I don't know if you've ever told me that.
Okay.
A liability?
Yes. Like on the P&L sheet, I was a liability for about the first year.
I thought P&L was profit and loss.
It is profit and loss.
Oh.
I'm not an accountant, so I was a loss.
Oh.
Or on the sheet, the accounting sheet.
No, like Zach Henderson, loss.
Loss. Yes. Liability, loss, loser, whatever you want to.
We've never talked about this. Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, from an actual financial perspective.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll have to flesh this out sometime.
But, I mean, all that to say, yeah, and I didn't know. Now, of course, like now I can be a little bit less verbose and still give a complete answer, but be a little bit more tight
economy
with it.
Economy of words.
Yes, I can, which is not what I'm exercising right now.
I'm not either. I'm not good at it.
After a Belgian, my economy of words has gone out the window.
We're in a budget deficit right now with words.
Big time. Big time. We're like the Fed. We're just printing money. We're just printing words. It doesn't stop. The inflation is going sky high.
Oh, man.
Yes, that's exactly what's happening right now. But yeah, man, I very much would just spend minutes, which over the course of time turned into hours of just yapping with people about the context of the context of the context of their questions.
Sure.
And, you know, some of those, I mean, a lot of these people were not even my clients. They were literally just people in the gym who were just making conversation.
Right.
That's another reason why I was a liability. So I'm very much in that same vein where it's like, I could give you like a simple soundbite answer.
Sure.
Which may even be valuable for some people, but if I'm face to face with somebody, I want to give them the goods.
Right.
I want to make sure that we get to the root of the issue and give them the full story.
To tie this back into John Meadows and Louis Simmons, in what we were talking about earlier, if you look at coaching and training purely as a business metric, then the John Meadows of the world and the Louis Simmons of the world would charge $500 an hour to talk to them because their time is valuable. You're asking questions that need to be fleshed out. And so I'm going to charge you $500, whatever they're going to charge. What makes you different, what makes them different, is that we're separating the business out from just the love of training, the love of coaching, and the love of helping people. It would be super, super easy. You see this on Instagram all the time, to just give a very superficial tic-tac solution to a complex question. Mm-hmm. And be like, you want to lose weight? Don't eat breakfast. I don't know. Fuck. Yeah, don't eat breakfast. You just don't eat breakfast.
Right.
There you go.
And then you could be the don't eat breakfast guy.
Right. I could be the don't eat breakfast guy.
Yeah.
Or, I could be, you want to build your bench press? Well, you should bench press more. Pay me my money. It's not that simple, you know? That's not coaching. That's it. That's not coaching. The fundamental difference that we're talking about when people are asking questions, whether it's John Meadows, Louis Simmons, or you and I, is that you can either get the Instagram tic-tac answer that you might be looking for, and that might be fine, or you can get a coach's answer, which is going to cost you a little bit more time, but at least according to you, with your L, and these guys, and me, I'm not satisfied with that tic-tac answer. It's a personal thing, and also I don't think I'm doing a service to the person who's asking me the question. So I'm sorry I don't have the economy of words, but this is going to take a minute.
Right.
Which is, and I love coaching, and I love training, I love helping people, so I'm going to separate the business out.
Mm.
And I just want to have a conversation with you.
Yeah.
So it's tricky, especially when you're coaching like in the moment, like in the gym. It is tricky. But, I mean, we wouldn't be good coaches if we just spout off sound bites and easy answers for all the complex questions that we get thrown our way. That's not coaching.
Right. And as we find ourselves in a more technologically advanced market where, you know, we have things like Peloton, we have things mm-hmm. like the Mirror, we have mm-hmm. Instagram, we have TikTok, we have all these bite-sized solutions, we have all these 15-second micro edutainments, and, you know, pieces of content that are, you know, consuming our attention, it's important to kind of take the line. And again, that's kind of why I kind of made the commitment to long-form YouTube content about a year and a half ago. I'm not even saying that I'm going to do that long-term, but I knew that, like, I had to get a lot of these very nuanced, contextual answers to how do you do kettlebells? You know, and for those who are listening, I'm doing my big quote fingers here. Like, I wanted to have a deep dive video database of those answers.
Yeah, how do you build muscle? Lift weights. Yeah, just lift weights.
That's it.
That's it.
That's it.
That's all you gotta do.
Yeah. But yeah, man, I mean, if I wasn't inspired and passionate about this stuff, I wouldn't have lasted this long. Neither would you, mm-hmm. neither would someone like Louis Simmons or anybody who's been in the business really for more than 10, 15 years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because it's like a lot of things. You get the 7-year itch. And if it's not in your blood, you move on to something else.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's one of the coolest things about getting older and having more experience is you start to just find more groundedness, more, you know, your well is deeper
mm-hmm.
the longer you're in any industry. And I think if you can make it over the hump of what is, I mean, in the fitness industry, I think we've talked about this. A lot of trainers don't last more than 2 years,
mm-hmm.
kind of at the top end. And then, you know, if you can make it past 7, 8, 9 years, well, now you're talking about being a lifer.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can be a lifer, a lifelong student, a lifelong practitioner of the craft, well, now you're actually starting to develop something special. You can kind of alchemize some magic that you can turn into a long-term career, or if nothing else, just having a vault and a well of knowledge and experience to really help people in a very nuanced way.
Mm-hmm.
And the fitness industry is still very new, still very young and fresh,
mm-hmm.
all things considered. but we stand on the shoulders of giants. We've got Arnold. We've got, you know, looking way back, we've got like Eugene Sandow, mm-hmm. Arthur Saxon, mm-hmm. the old-time strongmen.
Mm-hmm.
Then we've got, like, what, Vladimir Yanda, early 1900s.
Yeah.
Kind of like the foundations of, like, what would become physical therapy,
mm-hmm.
Pilates, stuff like that. And then we've got Jack LaLanne.
Way ahead of his time, really.
Jack LaLanne, who was 50s, 60s?
Earlier than that.
You think so?
Well, probably 50s and 60s. He had the first like fitness show on TV.
Yeah.
And was lifting weights, eating vegetables, like.
Yeah, he was like.
You know.
Eat your vegetables, drink your water, here's some push-ups.
Yes.
Swim the river down and back.
It's nuts to me that our industry has spun into all sorts of different things to be nice. And yet Jack LaLanne was doing like the fundamentals back in the 1950s. And way ahead of his time.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
And the irony of all that being, like, even in the 1960s when they started introducing strength and conditioning at the collegiate, like, football level, they thought that if you lifted weights, you'd be too muscle-bound and you couldn't perform.
Right.
And then Nebraska, who I think is the first collegiate football program to start a strength and conditioning, like, routine with their football players, I think it was Nebraska, started beating everybody, and they're like, ah, shit, we gotta get on that. And now it would be weird if you walked into any university setting that didn't have a full-fledged strength and conditioning staff, weight room, all that.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, it's incredible.
Yeah.
Like, so, where we've come in the last 100 years. 100 years.
Yeah, 100 years. Because then, yeah, we're really talking about 100 years ago, we'll say 1920. That was around Vladimir Yanda mm-hmm. time scale, if memory serves me correct. And then obviously, we have, like, the Jack LaLanne. In the 70s and 80s, we have the rise of the bodybuilding, mm-hmm. which is Arnold, for all intents and purposes.
Franco,
yeah.
Played the Hulk.
Oh, from New York City.
You wouldn't like him if he's angry.
Yeah.
I can't remember his name right now, but yeah.
Yeah.
All those guys, yeah.
Yeah, anybody who's seen Pumping Iron,
mm-hmm.
like, it's mandatory watch. It's mandatory viewing. And then from there, things get a little crazy in the 80s with
Jazzercise,
Thighmaster, aerobics, which is not entirely, you know, a bad thing.
Sure.
But ultimately, when we're talking about the 90s, late 90s, that's really where, I guess, the market of like personal training really starts to take root.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, and then early 2000s, we have CrossFit.
Yep.
So, and things have obviously been exponentially expanding from there. So all that to say, Louis Simmons coming up with, I guess he founded Westside in, I would assume, early 90s?
I think so.
Maybe even in the 80s. I'm not totally sure. But there's at least one Westside Barbell expert in town that we could ask.
Mm-hmm. Who's that?
Mm-hmm. That's Stu.
I don't know Stu.
Stu Breeding.
I don't know that guy.
Yeah.
Oh, all right.
Yeah, if I showed him to you, you would know.
Maybe.
Who he is. Yeah.
Also, the Hulk that we were thinking of is Lou Ferrigno.
Ferrigno. That's right. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, all this to say, strength training in the way that we kind of understand it today is still just a super new concept. And specifically the market of like strength coaching, personal training, running gyms. This is all still pretty new. So there's still a lot to glean from the old school, even if the old school is in relatively recent history.
You know, there are days where I'm still a little bit conflicted about what I want my gym to be. As a personal trainer, more often than not, client programs are guided by their goals, their needs, their goals, limitations, so on and so forth. And the stuff they like to do, you know, like a lot of people like to feel like they're burning calories. So like moving fast, sweating, breathing heavy, whatever. I'm still figuring out what I want the backbone, for lack of a better word, of AVSC to be. And I think it is and always will be. And I'm starting to lean harder into it 6 months in. We lift weights, hard, heavy weight, relatively speaking. The reason that I bring that up is because I have been conflicted. You know, people, again, people like circuit training, they like hit intervals, they like to sweat, and that's all fine and good. I don't have anything against that, but if it's a careful dance, kind of going back to sort of the themes that we're talking about here, I don't want to be so dogmatic in my approach that I'm inflexible. In other words, I do things a certain way. If you don't like the way that I do things, then you can find somebody else. I don't want to be that dogmatic because I don't think it's warranted. I think there's plenty of stuff we can do to elicit a good training response that's not so rigid. At the same time, like, I firmly believe in strength training. And depending on the client and their needs and their goals, there are some parameters that sort of guide what that looks like. You know, you can't high intensity interval train with 300 pounds on your back. You just can't, you know?
Right.
So unless you're just a monster and 300 pounds is like your 65% or whatever, but you just can't. And so I have been thinking about this a lot more in my own gym. Like, what do I want my identity to be as a gym owner, as a business owner, as a coach, now that I have my own physical space? How do I want to write these workouts and guide my clients? Again, taking into consideration that, you know, their goals, their needs, schedule, so on and so forth. How do I align my values as a coach with their needs and wants as a client? It's internal like monologue that I have quite often, actually. So, but I am starting to lean more heavily into the lifting. Like, we lift. Now, if you want to sweat it out and burn some calories and be, you know, breathing heavy, I will carve time for that. But we deadlift, we bench, we squat, we do some single leg this and that, you know, single arm this and that. Like, we lift. That's what we do. If you want circuit training, if you want jazzercise, if you want the Zumba style, that's fine. But that's not what I'm about. That's not what we're going to do. It's a very, not difficult, but interesting dynamic environment, whatever you want to call it, that I'm sort of navigating right now. And I don't have a strict answer for it. And again, going back to coaches that I don't like, I don't want to be like them, but I also do want to have like an identity with what I do, how I do it, what we stand for, what those values are. And maybe it just needs to be, honestly, just I literally just need to list out values and have it on the wall. I had a coach a long time ago, mentor coach, same thing about some of these guys, would give me anything and everything that I wanted. As far as like asking him questions, like, he would talk to me all day long about coaching because that's the kind of coach that he was. He wanted to give back to the coaching community. And he, very simply, he's like, what's important? What's the most important thing? And so that's how he sort of re-centered his coaching style was if he's starting to, same with like Dan John or whatever, every time I feel like I'm getting a little bit too cutesy in my programming, I go back to Dan John's writings because he's very straightforward, very simple. And I'm like, this is the kind of coach that I want to be. So what's most important? What do those values look like? I think that what I'm going to do is end up, you know, writing them down, fleshing them out, sticking them on the wall. And every day that I walk in that room and every, you know, for me and for my clients, this is what we stand for. This is important. These are our values. And that helps guide everything else that's going on in here.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, man. Well, especially when you're running a brick and mortar business, that becomes all the more important and pertinent. It's because, I mean, you have people who literally walk in your front door,
mm-hmm.
and you have people who stumble across your website,
mm-hmm.
and Andy Vann Strength and Conditioning, again, to some people, it carries a certain amount of cachet, but to the average consumer, they don't know the difference between that and Planet Fitness, YMCA, mm-hmm. Equinox,
D1,
Lifetime,
yeah.
D1, you know, whatever else is around town. But yeah, so I mean, you don't necessarily have the, like, you have a great solution. Doesn't mean it's the right solution for everybody at their specific, like, time in their life.
Sure.
But you have an expertise. You can provide a depth of service in a particular area that, for a lot of people, probably for most people, is exactly what they need for their fitness.
Mm-hmm.
And putting a flag in the ground, like, this is what I stand for, this is what I don't do, it can be hard.
It's very hard.
It can be real hard. Because, I mean, that's something that I struggle with. Even though my forward-facing brand is very kettlebell,
mm-hmm.
I mean, a very certain style of kettlebell, I mean, the fact of the matter is, and I've said this multiple times, when it actually comes to how I approach each individual client, especially when we're talking about clients in the comfort of their own homes, mm-hmm. which is mostly what I do around here in Nashville, it's like, I'm not the kettlebell guy. Like, if you have a pair of 10-pound dumbbells and, like, a mat, well, then suddenly I'm the 10-pound dumbbell and mat guy.
Right.
Like, I have to be.
Right.
You know? So that affords me a little bit of flexibility in the sense that, hey, whatever you got, I can come in and help.
Sure.
And if you have, like, a brick-and-mortar business, obviously you have to stand for something a little bit more than that. But even where I'm at, you know, there's that component as well. So it's not easy, but, you know, over the course of time, the more confident you can be in your abilities, that's based on years of experience, lots of education, you know, the more people you can help. It's really just a matter of how you can communicate that to people,
mm-hmm.
and getting the people in the door that you are best equipped to help.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, that's kind of why the fitness industry is kind of crazy, because mm-hmm. what people want is not always what they need,
right?
Obviously vice versa, and there's a whole lot of ideas, conceptions, misconceptions about what health and fitness should be, should look like, and that whole thing. So as coaches, oftentimes we're kind of stuck in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
Between, like, what someone thinks they want and thinks they need and what they really want and really need, and, you know, where does our method kind of fit into all of that? It's all tricky. But again, it goes all the way back to the genesis of this conversation, which is being able to take the time to have a nuanced conversation with somebody.
Right.
And educate them, elucidate them, give them perspective and context around what their physical practice could be. Hmm. And maybe for their goals and where they're at, what it should be from our best advice. So, yeah, man, this business is tricky. It's tough. I mean, no matter where you are, but you're someone obviously who has a brick and mortar business. I'm a little bit more, you know, flexible and online and all that stuff. But I mean, at the end of the day, like we're doing the same fundamental thing, which is helping people to the best of our ability and meeting people where they are.
Mm-hmm.
And if we can continue to do that, I think we'll be in a good place.
Be the next Mountain Dog, Louis Simmons. Wish, but no.
I don't think we'll ever get that jacked. To be fair.
Keep trying, but I don't think so.
To be fair, you know. You know, you see pictures of Louis Simmons with his he had his name like tattooed across stomach and the axes and stuff.
Yeah.
And, you know, John Meadows was just yoked like crazy.
Yeah.
And yeah, man, I mean, these guys, it's kind of cool to have the example of, you know, guys who are a little bit older who obviously put in the years and the decades of work. And they did it because they were passionate.
Mm-hmm.
You know? I haven't necessarily seen any like YouTube videos on like reflections on Louis Simmons. I probably should search because I'm sure there's a lot out there. But you know, when John Meadows passed, there was a couple of YouTubers who I follow who had worked directly with John Meadows who put out videos about like, hey, this is what this guy did above and beyond what he was asked to do.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, like, for example, Eugene Teo, who is a coach in Australia, did a lot of content with John Meadows, I think maybe like 4 or 5 years ago. And I kind of meant to bring this up earlier, but he had a very... He had a story that very much kind of fit into what we were talking about earlier, which is the fact that, you know, something to the effect of, you know, John Meadows had a, maybe an offer to do a workshop in Australia for more money or like a bigger platform or, you know, maybe something that was originally scheduled with Eugene, but that he not only kept his end of the deal, but really went above and beyond to hang out with him and just to impart a lot on him. And then vice versa, I think, like Eugene came to America, I think, and I think John Meadows hosted him in his home and, you know, took him to train in the gym that that he trained at. So all that to say, From stories that you hear, you can tell that these are guys who obviously need and want to make a living, but they don't have it twisted. They're servants of the craft. They're servants of the art of training, strength training, muscle building, you know, whatever your passion is. And, you know, there's a story of, you know, the fisherman in, you know, like Jamaica, who's catching all these delicious fish, and the American businessman comes down and says, hey, we could franchise a fish fry business and you could be a multimillionaire. You know, you give it 25 years and blah, 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 blah. And then you'll be able to retire after all this work. And then the fisherman says, well, what will I do in retirement? He says, hi, you can just hang out here on the beach and fish. He's like, well, that's what I'm doing right now. So why don't we just cut all of the corporate nonsense and just let me exercise and practice my passion now and always. And that's very much what I think these guys were doing with training and lifting weights. They were just doing it.
They were just doing it.
And whatever accolades and, you know, business success and everything comes on the back of that, it's great, but it only feeds the passion for doing more of it. And I think you see that in guys like John and Louis, who we've been talking about. You also see that in guys like Dave Tate.
Mm-hmm.
You see that in guys like Mark Bell.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure a lot of, and Dan John, and a lot of other names that, you know, you could fill out a whole list about.
Mm-hmm.
So that's something that I always try to keep in mind. It's like, if this is something that you're really passionate about, don't get caught up in how the business can obfuscate that.
Right.
And that's as my business, and I'm as you express, as your business grows and it becomes like a bigger logistical point in your life,
mm-hmm.
like something you kind of got to deal with, it's important to keep the perspective in the front burner of this is the passion, and let's not let the passion be perverted by the profits.
Mm. And, oh, I love that.
And ultimately, that's how it works out best for everybody.
I dig it. That was a good episode, considering we didn't talk at all about what I thought we were talking about. That was a really good one. This is why we do this. This is honestly why we do this. This is why we started the podcast, is because we just let it roll. This is a good time.
Yeah, man.
You want to send us off?
Well, I figured once we got 45 minutes in, it's like, okay, we are not talking about what we set out to talk about.
That's all right. We got plenty of time.
And that's okay. Yeah, because, again, we're going to be back here next Monday.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, just as we wrap up here, listen, thank you so much for watching. If you're on Instagram, we're going to maybe, so we're doing a new camera angle here with the Instagram Live. It's
right.
Obviously tipped over. So if you're watching on your phone, you actually have to physically turn your phone over to watch. It looks a lot better being a lot closer in
right.
landscape mode,
right.
even though it's not Instagram friendly, but so be it. And I'm going to maybe make it a point to maybe try to chop some videos up for content.
Okay.
Here. So again, a big thanks to Zahn's Brewing here in West Nashville. The
Belgian Blonde.
Belgian Blonde is delish.
Mm-hmm.
Zahn's keeps a tight but high quality menu.
I very much like it. Yeah, this is actually where I was coming to on Saturday when you messaged me, and I literally was like moments away from the Trinity exit. So I was literally going to come here on Saturday, and then you were like, hey, why not East Nashville Beer Works? And I was like, bird!
East Nashville Beer Works is great as well.
Yeah.
It's, obviously.
It's just closer, yeah.
Yeah, we live on the east side.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah.
But yeah, so again, big thanks to Ken and the crew behind the bar for hosting us, for keeping us hydrated in the only way that they can.
Mm-hmm.
So, thanks again for listening, for watching, and for subscribing wherever you get your podcasts. We've got a lot of great episodes coming up. Some guests lined up,
mm-hmm.
some ideas lined up, and we're really excited about this year. So, Andy, anything else to wrap up with?
Nope.
All right. A to Z, no BS. We will see you next time.
Bye.